Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear that couple shouting, it's Dana and Jay. It's Dana and Jay.
Welcome to the latest edition to Hear That Podcast Growl. I'm Paul Ender Jr. and Jay Morrison of The Athletic. Excited to be with you on a Thursday. Boo week, Jay.
Yes.
Battle of Ohio is upon us.
It's kind of crazy. I always say this rivalry, it always seems like the underdog wins more often than not. And that's certainly continued. I mean, you look at how good the Bengals have been the last 2 years at least, and just can't find a way to beat this Browns team. It's kind of head scratching.
Mystifyingstreaks.com. You can look this up, and what has happened lately with the Browns and the Bengals would show up there. We've got a lot to get into about this weekend's boo at Paycor. So we've got guests, Jay.
Yes.
This is good. We're going to be guest heavy because you know what people have gotten a lot of this week? Listening to us talk. Okay. You know, you throw in the live room, a longer walk out, a nice long Tuesday show. We do our radio hits across the stations around here, and it's just a lot of us. And there's a lot of people saying really interesting things that are relevant to Sunday, that are relevant to this team. So we thought we would bring some of them in. Nate Tice is going to join us on today's episode. Had a conversation with him. I have talked about the Athletic Football Show a ton lately and about how they have just become basically an extension of HTPG at this point. They keep opening with these long 20-minute monologues about the Bengals. Mm-hmm. Nate took a lot of fire last year for questioning the sustainability of what the Bengals were doing on their run to the Super Bowl. And he's like, and now it's the exact opposite, you know, and now all the Bengals fans that have been in his mentions yelling at him then are loving him pointing out how much they have created some sustainability. And he's kind of repeatedly called this his favorite team to watch. And he just loves how they have kind of evolved over the course of the season. So I wanted to talk to him about that. It was fun. It was fantastic. Great conversation with Nate. Going to be coming your way. We talk all things Bengals. Of course, as you would expect, Bengals-Browns means our good friend and yours, friend of the program, Zach Jackson, returns back to talk about as interesting of a year as you can get on a beat. And it is now taking the next step with Deshaun Watson back. A lot of other stuff happening in Cleveland, of course. Jay, you have that conversation with Zach. So we will get into that, all things Browns world, to get a feel for what to expect on Sunday. Of course, we'll have Arby's, growler bets, run passer boots, predictions, all of that coming your way. Jay's got stats, leftover stats that we teased to you from Tuesday. We're going to get them in today. We're not going to skip over. I'm not going to blow it this time. We're going to get it in.
I mean, we did go long on Tuesday. I feel like there were some things that had to be cut, and it's one thing to cut them and then forget them, but we're going to cut them and come back to them.
Coming back. They're too good. We're going to keep them in. Okay, here we go. News time, Jay. The news, there's not a ton of it. Joe Mixon goes full in Wednesday's practice, so that will clear him out of the concussion protocol. So he is good to go, which was sort of the anticipation from what we heard after the game and on Monday from Zach Taylor. So Mixon all the way back, which of course has led to the discussion conversation of the week and really of the last few weeks in different capacities. That is, so Mixon's back. P. Ryan's been great. What happens next? Jay, you have a long story up about that. You know my favorite. I love the Lebowski line. A lot of ins, a lot of outs, a lot of what have yous involved in the Mixon and P. Ryan discussion at this point.
Yeah, it's kind of the big question right now is how they're going to handle it. And I thought it was interesting. I mean, I asked the question in the press conference yesterday about, you know, how beneficial is it really to have two quality running backs when you're talking about week 17, week 18, the playoffs, keeping these guys fresh. I wasn't even going in that direction of who's running back one. And Zach just says, Joe Mixon's our starting running back. Without me even mentioning anything along those lines, I think they're trying to make it clear. And it is kind of surprising. I get it. P. Ryan has played really, really well, but you know, you've pointed it out and pointed me towards those stats that are in the story that at how good Joe Mixon has been since week five. And I think people kind of look at, oh, he just had one game against Carolina, the 5-touchdown game. And it hasn't been this. They've really found something in the run game. And I think you're going to see, you're going to see Sunday look a lot like what things look like before Joe got hurt. And yeah, maybe Samaje moves in there and gets a few more snaps on the second and longs, but the way this team has been performing on first down, maybe there's not going to be a lot of second longs. Maybe those opportunities aren't going to be there for him. So I'm really interested to track how that looks, how that split looks between those guys on Sunday.
Yeah. And we'll see. I have one question, Jay, that I haven't heard anyone ask. And Lord knows that's hard to do in this conversation because it's been talked about a lot over the last 3 weeks. Are people allowed to stop yelling at them about running P. Ryan in the Super Bowl now? Because like now that he's Superman, apparently, and everybody loves Samaje P. Ryan, can the conversation about why the hell would you hand it to P. Ryan on 3rd-and-1 in the Super Bowl? It's amazing how that's not brought up anymore. You know, it's... And I say that again, that's tongue-in-cheek, much white, like Brian Callahan had a tongue-in-cheek comment yesterday when he was talking on this topic and said, look, this is tongue-in-cheek, but no one's telling us to go replace Jamar Chase with Trenton Irwin, okay? And that doesn't mean Trenton didn't do a great job filling in and stepping in. It's just, and I think that's sort of their view on it. Like, Mixon is still a much more dynamic player. He is a much more energetic make you miss explosive type than P. Ryan. The grinding style, the powerful style of P. Ryan has been good for them, been good for efficiency. But again, you know, Mixon averaging 4.9 per rush since week five. He's certainly been good, and that's going to continue to stay pretty much the same. I think you will see more, but it's not going to be. I'm just amazed at how many people are just like, oh no, just forget it. You know, just go with P. Ryan. Yeah. You know that it's you need to. Like, I just think this is so overblown at this point. Like, we're talking about what percentage of snaps, like. They've both been good. You know why they've both been good? Because the line has been good. Because the run game has been good. The holes are open. And, you know, they're running. You know, that's why Joe Mixon has been able to run for as many yards as he had been. He's been the number one efficient running back in football over that time. And P. Ryan has been good in that respect, too. I think he's 12th on that list, averaging about 4.2 over that run. I mean, that's great. That it's great to have two of those guys. Both of them being fresher is good. A little extra role and confidence in P. Ryan is good. That can be the conversation, and that's fine. I don't know why it always has to go one way or the other so dramatically. And I think people want there to be like a total change or a rift or something. Samaje's not having that. That's for sure.
And another point, I mean, it feels like Joe is one of those guys that needs to get in a rhythm and needs to kind of feel the game and take some hits and work up that lather, so to speak. And P. Ryan doesn't. P. Ryan is fine going in cold on third down and doing his job. And that he said that when I talked to him yesterday. He said, if I need to get into a rhythm, I'm going to get the quarterback killed. He's like, I have to be ready as soon as I go in there. And that's not just running the ball as a passer. It's obviously his pass pro. And it's a little different with Joe. I don't think you would see Mixon be as effective if it turned into more of an even split. So look for, I guess you would say, more of the same on Sunday.
How bad the running game was earlier in the year certainly clouded the view of Joe Mixon. It was awful. He was terrible. We talked about it here. But, you know, you've seen since things have opened up how much it's been much more about what was going on scheme-wise and what was going on opening wise than it necessarily was to Mixon, who wasn't breaking enough tackles, who wasn't being elusive enough, but he has been since then. And the combo of the two is great. And I think them having their roles and their strengths, they're different from each other. That's good. Play them to that. I mean, there's really the amount of that's not preset roles where they're, one is a much better fit than the other is a small percentage of plays. And that's what we've spent so much time talking about. And so it ends up being a big point of conversation over a small percentage of the actual game. But so we'll move on. We'll move on from there. A lot of Bengals praise, coming in from up top right now. A lot of people talking about the Bengals after what they did against the Chiefs. Understandably, people kind of checking back in on them that haven't been paying attention. That's pretty standard. This goes along with the P. Ryan Super Bowl run thing. I have a bone to pick with things that I see sometimes online, and that is, can you stick with the people you don't like that are like the national voices, right? Like, I feel like this happens and we see a lot of, did you guys see Skip Bayless said we're great, right? And like, stop. No, you said this guy stinks, right? Pro Football Talk, Florio thinks we're up in those his power rankings, right? Stop. I thought you hated this man, right? Like, I don't, you can't just because somebody says something great, be like, oh, this is fantastic. Did you see what they said on Speak for Yourself? Like, I mean, it's like, just, I'm fine. Like, it's great. I enjoy people enjoying what's going on and hearing people talk about your team when it hasn't always happened over time. But I think you got to stick with your enemies, right? Stick with who your actual enemies are, or else you end up in Bengals talk hypocrisy.
That losing streak continues to the Browns, and I think they're going to not want to watch those shows on Monday because it's going to completely go back the other way.
Well, that's the way this league goes, right?
Yeah.
Joe Burrow told us, I mean, we stink one week and we're great the next week, right? I mean, and that's so. I mean, it's just the nature of the roller coaster, and right now the roller coaster is Jay, you're a roller coaster guy. What would be the physically best part of any roller coaster? Are you a first down the first hill guy? Is it the end when you realize how great that was? Wherever that is, that's where the Bengals are right now.
I'm yes, first hill. It seems like a lot of those rides are just kind of peter out after that first hill. The Beast being a major exception. But yeah, and it's weird because everybody thinks up is the good part. No, that's the boring part. I going up that hill, you're just waiting for the ride to start.
Now, the best part's when you start throwing things at people behind you, right, Jay?
Well, you have a very small margin to do that because there's cameras watching you. You have to get right past the camera before you start speeding. Not
that
you've ever
done this or that we condone this.
This is all hypothetical.
Hypotheticals from Jay, crazy lunatic high schooler. All right. Quick news before we move. We're already derailed. Kevin Huber to the PS, which I think was suggested by Darren Simmons the other day. So that will happen. Joe Burrow was AFC Player of the Week, fourth time in his career, second time this year, the previous being against Atlanta. No surprise there after he has that great game against the Chiefs. Hayden Hurst, the calf, still doubtful. Although Zach Taylor sort of like, I never said he was going to be out. This is when someone mentioned he's going to be out, but doubtful is the word, and that we know what doubtful means. So we'll see how that goes. I think that feels like Hayden really wants to try to play, is what that feels like. But they know he's not going to. Any other news that I skipped over or forgotten, Jay, or that you'd like to touch on?
No, I don't believe so. I mean, Jesse Bates showed up on the injury report with a groin, but I think that was an entry to avoid a fine.
Yeah. It certainly suggests that. All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor. Let's go to Nate Tice. So Nate Tice does the Athletic Football Show with our Robert Mays. And I hope you guys listen to that. It should be part of your weekly listen. They're awesome. They do a great job of covering the entire league in depth and deep into the film of the biggest games right after on Sunday and their hangover show on Monday. So much good content on that feed. You should really be following that on our app, on The Athletic, or just on iTunes or wherever. Great stuff. But Nate has really kind of fallen in love with this Bengals team. And so I really wanted to kind of tap into this. Here is a conversation with Nate Tice. First time on the show, but not the first time to the ears of Bengals fans that listen to hear that podcast, Growlin, because as I have been telling you on repeat in recent weeks, you need to be listening to the Athletic Football Show if you want Bengals content, because they open every show now with 20 minutes of nothing but Bengals content, it seems like. Nate Tice, great to have you on.
Thanks for having me on. Yeah, it's been a we're just talking on the pre-show, but it's been a pleasure to now talk about the Bengals and have Bengals fans kind of going like, hey, check this out. Don't get mad at this guy anymore. He's actually saying nice things. So no, it's been awesome. I've been like I was saying to you just a couple minutes ago, I've truly been enjoying watching this Bengals team this year. It's been one of my favorite watches, offense and defense. So my pleasure, as they'll say at Chick-fil-A, my pleasure.
Yeah, with this. Absolutely. I have listened to you guys evolve this year as well in the conversation about the Bengals, because clearly it opened up in the beginning part of the year where so much was about the tendencies they had, you know, under center run over and over and over again. And it was in the funnels that they were in and the silos and the two different offenses they were running. And certainly Bengals fans, and we've talked about it ad nauseum here on this show too, but as they have evolved, what has impressed you the most in regards to how they have evolved from that to, you know, the very diversified sort of attack that they've become now?
Yeah, this whole offseason, I kind of figured how defense would play against this team and go, hey, we'll just run cover two against you and we're going to make you nickel and dime us. And the beginning of the year, that's why I was kind of like laughing. I wouldn't say laughing, but kind of sighing watching the Bengals team, like, man, you had all offseason to know this is what defense are doing and you're still running your head against the wall. Every time, like you said, every time you go under center on second down, especially, it's like, here comes a zone run. Like, you just, even for me that, you know, I watch a lot of these games, I'm not like truly studying like a quality control coach or an assistant coach would from an opposing team. And I'm noticing that. So I can only imagine these guys that get paid too much money, what they are noticing when they go game plan against these Bengals. So when it was against the Ravens in that Sunday night football game, and when we do that show, the Sunday night football games for both Robert and I is on in the background, and we kind of will notice some things, but really, like, if we want to like a deep dive in stats, it's kind of hard because we're trying to do that for all the other games that happen on a Sunday. But I'm watching that game and I'm just like, wow, they're doing some shotgun runs. Okay, that's interesting. And wow, there's more of them. Oh, Joe Burrow's like nickel and diming. And he had the one bad interception on the play action under center that I vividly remember. And I think that is the catalyst for everything that's happened since that game. I believe that was week five. Everything since then, there's always a tendency, and I just mentioned that with when I watch under center, second down, run the ball, is everybody self-scouts. And I think what Zach Taylor and this offensive staff has done is realize their own tendencies, and they just broke them completely. And I think it's helped everything. Not only that, Joe Burrow has become he was playing outstanding last year, but he's become a more complete quarterback in my eyes in the way that he is taking what the defense gives him. And I that sounds like such a coach adage and so boring and everything, but for this offense that thrived on explosive plays last year, that was a good thing. They have become less explosive, but become more efficient. And then when it comes to the, you know, nut cutting time, like we saw against the Chiefs, oh, we could just still go to our money plays, to our money players like T. Higgins and Jamar Chase, and look what we can do. That's a freaking terrifying offense to try and stop now. And that's why I've been so excited to talk about them, because this is more sustainable and they still have that kind of creamy goodness in the middle when they want to get to it. Like, so it's not just the frosting on top. They actually have like a nice sundae getting built up on offense. I mean, just throw food metaphors. I haven't eaten anything today.
Like, sorry, I'm very hungry.
Yeah. So very hungry right now. But so long story short, I think they ate their vegetables as Joe Burrow as a quarterback, as far as an offensive staff, and they diversified their run game out of the shotgun. And also just on top of it, learning to work over the middle with Tyler Boyd and Hayden Hurst. And I think that's just going to pay dividends now as we get into December and January.
I'll bite on this, not to continue it going, but I mean they also have the freezer of ice cream, though. You know what I mean? They have the deep freeze in the garden. They can always go. Always just go there and open it and just eat the chocolate chip cookie dough.
That's the funniest part.
Just throw it to Jamar is always there.
That's the funniest part is the biggest plays that they had, the touchdown T. Higgins in the first quarter or second quarter, and then also the last third down conversion to T. Higgins were the same plays they used to run way too many times last year. And the fact that they went, oh, we're going to go back to our money plays, but the money plays are better when you only run them twice a game and not a dozen times a game. And that money play for them is slant flats, which is, you know, slants on the outside. It used to be what the Packers used to run with Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy. And we saw what happened with that offense over the years. Teams just realize how to stop it. But when you can only run it twice a game and it's the perfect time to run it and your guys win, that's a lot better than running it 15 times. And the defense, like the Rams last year, were just sitting on it. They were just waiting for slant flat and other plays like that. That's what's awesome. That's the freezer. That's the freezer full of ice cream that you can eat at any single time you're hungry.
It's funny. We actually just got done talking with Zach Taylor about that. He meant, you know, slant flats. He's like, I mean, when you're in junior high, it's you're running it over and over again. And obviously they did too. He said the interesting thing that's happened for him and for them offensively is that there's this idea that they've gotten more complicated when it's being the exact opposite. He said, I would argue we've never been more simple. He said, we know how to, when you have better players, when you feel like you have better players, you just want them to play confidently and do what you do well. They've just found the things that they do well, and Burrow has the answer for all of them. And it ends up being what kind of has set off those things. It was just a matter of the first month plus the line gelling and them figuring out what they do well. It's just surprising to me, and I'm curious your take on this, to see it become gun runs. Like, you know, that's so hard to do. It's so kind of been out of the blue for them strategically, and it spawned off them going back under center more, doing more of the duo and the wide zone has come back into the mix now lately. But it really started with that. How surprising was it for you that they were able to find that?
Pretty surprising, because it was always there. It was always Burrow is so much better in the gun. That's why at LSU he was almost exclusively gun and just tearing up defenses, as we all know. And he just, that's how quarterbacks are. Everybody has their own quirks. Some quarterbacks don't like turning their back to the defense. Some like Russell Wilson thinks that he can thrive in empty, but he really can't. Everybody has their preferences. I don't know why I just took a pot shot at him on this podcast of the Bengals, but why not? Throwing shrapnel everywhere. But that is, I think they realize, okay, we can't. This is exactly what happened with the Chiefs offense. This is what happened with the Bills offense. When they went to a bunch of gun spread looks with light personnel, 11 personnel, three wide receivers, which the Bengals were loving to do. That's another side, as they're using jumbo a little bit more as well. But is that we only can run so many runs from those formations and personnel groupings. And usually it was zone, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with zone. But again, defenses get paid a lot of money, coordinators and their players. When you just run the same thing over and over, unless you have dominant players, and I don't think anyone, even the highest Bengals fans that are in my mentions all the time, will say that the offensive line is the strength of this team. So how do we help this out? Okay, yes, offensive lines got better, so they diversify that run game. And I think that's where the Ravens game is where I first saw it. They're running trap, which is just pulling one guy and kicking out. And you can do that without a tight end attached to the formation. So it's just this double benefit. The quarterback run game, designed runs, I think Burrow has already doubled his number from last year on designed runs. The first touchdown was just that's old school single wing football. Like, you just catch the ball and run up the middle. But it's great because the defenses are so worried about Tyler Boyd, Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, Hayden Hurst, P. Ryan or Mixon coming out of the backfield. Their eyes are going to the pass. And so now Burrow just runs simply up the middle, and that's easy. Like, they just stop running their heads against the wall and just going, okay, we're going to just run zone because that's the run we can run. They're like, oh, let's try pin pull. Let's try draws. Let's just try this other stuff. And it's worked beautifully because teams have to worry about them dicing them up in the pass game from the shotgun. So it's just all tying all together, which is just so funny, where you can just go, they went to the shotgun and it's just like, yeah, it worked. Yeah, I mean, it did. That's really what happened. And it's so awesome to hear Zach Taylor says, yeah, it's kind of simple, but yeah, this is what's working.
It's funny. I don't think I've ever seen a team go from so drastically terrible running the ball to so incredibly efficient. I mean, we had the joke, it was hashtag 35th, because when you found the running back qualifiers of the one through 35, and Mixon was 35th in every category for the first 6 weeks, it was just over and over and over and again. Yep. But once they unlocked it, it proved that maybe it's not as much Mixon. Because they both have come in, Mixon actually most highest success rate since week six of any running back, and P. Ryan has done well in it too. Obviously, when he's been put in there, it's because the stuff they're doing is opening up more, and it allows everybody to kind of play. That's interesting evolution. I want to ask you real quick about Burrow in a big picture lens here before I move over to Lou Anarumo and his defense, which you've done some great stuff on. That's up on your Twitter feed and on the YouTube feed right now for the Athletic Football Show. Burrow against, I've written far too much and done far too many charts on Burrow's MVP case at this point. How do you view him against the others? He doesn't have the sexiness of some of the plays and the big arm and Josh Allen's jumping over people and Jalen Hurts is the new guy and Tua and everything's happening there is exciting. Like you said, his evolution, what's set him apart has been eating vegetables, right? I mean, It's like, how do you view him as far as how well he's playing against other quarterbacks in the league and specifically when you start talking about this MVP conversation that's popping up now?
Yeah, and that's what's so cool with Burrow. And honestly, I group him and Dak Prescott a lot together because you see them play quarterback as opposed to being just as true overwhelming talent. You watch Josh Allen play. I if I'm teaching a young quarterback, I'm never using Josh Allen film. I never. Like, that guy is just a freak of freaks. And it's so what am I supposed to do? It was like show, oh yeah, be 6'5", 245 and run faster than everybody and throw defensive ends off you. That's not real. Patrick Mahomes, what's amazing about Mahomes is that he does all the crazy stuff with the Gumby stuff and just contorts his body and can throw, 70 yards on a whim. And on top of it, he is really good from the pocket. And that's why, I'm going to get to how much I love how Burrow's playing. Mahomes is still my first team all pro and MVP. If season ended right now, we still have another month, but his is the same thing. I wouldn't really use that as teach tape. Like, that is not how I would teach a quarterback to play. He does it he's one of one. But when you watch Burrow and you see his timing, and that is what his superpower is, his timing and his accuracy. I have compared him, and I meant this when he first came in, that he has better arm strength than Chad Pennington, in the sense he knows what he is. He knows he doesn't have this crazy arm. He's really accurate and understands leverage and understands how to get rid of the ball. That's what you're saying. It's not sexy. The explosive plays are down, but his efficiency is like shot through the roof. I think it's like from like a certain stretch, it's shot up like 10% or 12% or something, high 60s%, because he's learning to, okay, I'm going to work underneath, get defenses to start creeping up. And then I'm going to hit Tyler Boyd on an over route. I'm going to hit Hayden Hurst on a bend. Go balls. And that's what last year was happening is that, and this happens a lot with QB evaluations, especially with college guys. People get enamored by go balls. But when you're talking about JV slant flats, every JV quarterback and varsity quarterback throws go balls first. That is the first throw you throw. That's why it's sometimes you want to see all the in-between stuff. Burrow's gotten so much more consistent, not just relying that. He can pull that card out whenever he wants, but all the stuff over the middle. So it's, and then on top of it, he's scrambling a lot more efficiently. Like, he is not just, I think last year he bounced around to extend plays. Now he hangs in a pocket to scramble as a last resort, and he's become more devastating as a scrambler. I think his yards, like, he had one rush of 10 or more yards last year, and I think he's like lapping that this year. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, but it's something ridiculous. But it's, that is what the difference is with him now. He's just becoming smarter. That's a smart player already that's learning, okay, I don't always have to be a hero. I can do all these other things. So to me, and we talked about this at the end of the show, I think he is making a very valid case for, again, Mahomes would be my first team all pro, but between Burrow, Allen, and Jalen Hurts a little bit, like, that's, they're really fighting for that second team all pro, which I think is more valid this year than it was last year.
Yeah. And so, the big reason you have that, and you have him now 3-0 against Patrick Mahomes, which right. When you start getting into that case, and then he'll have Josh Allen at Paycor Stadium on Monday Night Football in week 17. I've talked about this a lot. 8 of the last 10 MVPs have been a number one or number two seed. 8 of the last 10 have been number one seed. The other two are number two seeds. It's just, are you the quarterback of the best team? Like, that's where this thing ends up. And that's fair, because it will come down to that. Are you going to win enough? Are you going to beat those guys? And if he does go out there and do it, that award can be his. The other side of it is, though, I mean, Lou Anarumo and this defense are why they're 3-0 against the Chiefs.
Yes.
People say, oh, this was vindicating for Burrow. Burrow versus Mahomes. No, Anarumo versus Mahomes is 3-0 because he continues more than anybody else in this league to find ways to get in Mahomes' head at least a little bit. And just nobody else does a little bit, and that's really been enough to put Burrow and the offense over the top. What impressed you most about, and I'm not meaning this to be specifically about the Kansas City game, because he has two years worth of great tape on that. What specifically has impressed you about Anarumo and sort of the way that he's evolved?
Yeah, it's knowing when to lean into the punch, and I described this on my little breakdown of it, he knows when to throw a fastball, he knows when to throw a changeup, he knows when to throw a knuckleball out of nowhere. And that's what he is. He has five pitches in every game. And sometimes he just throws fastballs, and it's just, all right, we're going to just every third down, we're going to blitz the shit out of you. And then sometimes it's nothing. We're going to drop eight. We're going to do this, or we're going to just rush four and play soft coverage. They have a lot of smart players, especially on the back end, but they're really well coached. Like, they know tendencies so well. You can see these guys communicating in every game, which I think is so cool to watch when you start really seeing. That's what I say on the show as well, is that when you see repeat matchups, that's when it's the best. Because not only just divisional matchups, but just top teams, because then you start seeing how players communicate. And then also how players, like even that last third down that I broke down, Mahomes changes the protection because they got whooped on that same pressure look earlier in the game. So that is okay. That again, you get into this. I know what you know, but that's what they're getting into. It's like, it's getting to five layers of that. I think that's what's so cool, is his kind of big brotherness of, I'm not hitting you. And then he hits you. Like, that's what this defense does. That game was, the third downs was just fascinating to me, because third down, and I think more and people have become more aware of this, is the NFL is so situational. So first and second down, it's its own beast. Third and fourth down, it's its own beast. Red zone, it's its own beast. Goal line, everything's its own little situation. So when you just break down third and three pluses, third and one and two is considered short yardage, then you see the cat and mouse game of this game, because last year was dropping eight. And then this year they were like, no, we're going to blitz you. No one blitzes Mahomes. That's playing with fire. And they got him. They got free runners. They realized Orlando Brown's not worth the money he's asking for. They knew, they kind of were getting after him and figuring it out, making Mahomes have to point things out. Then the second half, Mahomes and the Chiefs, they were in, okay, we're going to wad this up and we're going to throw bombs away on you. So if you want to like make us throw short, we're going to hit you over the top, and got after him a couple times. MVS had the long seam ball and then also the corner route. But finally, that's what led to the last one, was that they showed the blitz and then they went, nope, we're going to do what we did last year to you and drop eight. And that's what he does every game, Lou Anarumo, and this defense is, I've seen him against last year against Justin Fields and the Bears, every third down, show pressure looks and then bail out and then have one guy hot drop because he was aware of what their pressure rules are. That is just like such like good game planning. That means they studied the crap out of tape and they realize what you are going to try to do against them, and they tweak what they do. And that's why I think they're really fun to watch. And I've said this a couple times, he's probably one of the most interesting coaches and units to watch in the league on either side of the ball, offense or defense.
Yeah. And one last note on that. I mean, Lou, we talked to him on Monday and he said that play he kept in his back pocket all game. It was the one he wanted to use, because it was the ultimate. He said the exact same thing you did. It's the, you know what I know, what you know, because he had dropped Sam Hubbard back to that middle linebacker spot three or four times over the course of last year in the divisional playoff against Tennessee. And he had also done it, I believe, earlier this year against the Steelers enough times. Every time Hubbard dropped back to the middle, he rushed. He came after it. It was a blitz. But this way, it was a perfect way for him to disguise a drop eight. And Hubbard just told me a little bit ago, I dropped right into where Kelsey was supposed to go. And that ended up being really the biggest difference in the play of not being able to get it to him.
Mahomes, they had two guys just sitting right there. Logan Wilson, I believe, was the Tampa dropper. That was the other thing, is they showed man pressure. Mm-hmm. When you MVS hits that corner route on them, the sail route on them, it's the same pressure look. So that, I bet you the Chiefs were just like, well, here comes this again. Yes. They're going to try and make me throw hot again. And they had two guys, like you said, Sam Hubbard and then Logan Wilson. They ran Tampa too. Mm-hmm. And Travis Kelce short circuited, because I believe he's only supposed to run like a 5-yard route there. And then he's like, oh shoot, this linebacker, Logan Wilson, keeps pushing back. So he's trying to get around him, and it actually condensed the space. So that way, it just, that Mahomes was getting into creation mode. And on top of it, that's the other thing. It's such an interesting play. That's why there's so many layers to this play. That's why it's like, really, that's why I've geeked out a lot about it. I'm trying to like really tell people, like, this play had layers. Is how do you say his last name? Osai?
Yeah, Joseph Osai.
Okay, mm-hmm. Cool. Good. I did a whole video on him and never looked up his pronunciation.
You got it right.
Yeah. Okay. So he was able to rush inside on Orlando Brown because he knew he had Hubbard as his contain player. Mm-hmm. You're only able to do that when you're not, that's a no-no. You're not supposed to rush inside, especially against a quarterback like Mahomes, and give up contain. But he could do that because he knew Hubbard would be the contain player. And so rushing three was what let him unlock his pass rush and beat Orlando Brown, which created the pressure and dropping eight. I mean, there's just so many layers to this, but that's so interesting with the Hubbard thing and that he's rush, because you can see Mahomes, he puts McKinnon on the other linebacker, and then he's making sure that they have four for four. So mm-hmm. he points Wilson and Hubbard to say, O-line, we're sliding to these two. So again, it was the, I know what you know. And I mean, if these both teams win their divisions, they'll play next year, or if they might meet again in the playoffs. Like, I'm curious what the next step to this is, because it's so fascinating to see this is what's happening. And this is only the third matchup between them.
Yeah. And the Chiefs made a lot of great adjustments too. I mean, the way they were able to run the ball and stuck with it, and they didn't back off of it. Like, you know, cause that was the bet last year, right? It was that you're not going to have the Andy discipline to run the ball.
Andy Reid gets bored.
Yeah, exactly. And it worked twice, and they knew it wouldn't work again, cause Andy Reid gets smart too. The last thing I want to say, I'll ask you before I'll let you go. How do you view the Bengals right now amongst the AFC contenders, this sort of, you know, this group that is, when the tears come out, there they are, they're all kind of up in that four that appears to be there. How do you view them? How do you view that big four right now?
I really, how the teams, how I feel about them right now, it's, to me, Chiefs are still my number one team, even though they've lost to the Bengals and the Bills now, which is kind of funny. I feel like a hypocrite saying that, but it's them, Bills and Bengals, like that, those three I truly think are just in their own kind of tier, because they're so complete. And I know the Chiefs defense is wishy-washy. We just saw their tackling ability against this Bengals team, which is what it got them last year as well. But I do believe Spags is really good once the playoff time start. And he kind of, we're talking about game planning, he's one of the better ones, Steve Spagnuolo, as a defense coordinator. They still have Mahomes. The Bills losing Von Miller is really interesting. And they've had some blemishes with the up and downness of Josh Allen being Professor Chaos. And so that's what he is, man. He is just, he would be so much fun to coach, but so terrifying at the same time, because he just, what he does, just that ostrich running around. But I just think the Bengals are right in there, and as a true contender, as a true Final Four candidate, because of just the sustainability of their whole team. I their defense is going to keep them in every game. And the fact that their offense isn't relying on explosive plays, I really want to say they're like 19th in explosive play rate. Why I want to keep bringing that up is because that's awesome. That means last year they were so reliable. Those go up and down. Explosive plays can be, unless you have Randy Moss, can be very high variable. So the fact that they can go to that when they want to, that makes me just feel really optimistic. But I mean, to me, valid Final Four candidate, you know, so make it to the conference championship game, and you never know what happens in the playoffs. I think they're a better team than they were last year, and they made the Super Bowl last year, which is just so crazy.
Yeah, and sustainability for now and for the future. I mean, their line is locked up, the interior line that they rebuilt, and Burrow, they will give a gazillion dollars
Cordell to. Cordell Volson, like, what the hell?
How about that? You know, that talk about a shock of the year, that you find a fourth-round pick, and he shows up and starts week one, and it's a disaster, but has gotten better every week. In the last three weeks has seen Chris Jones, Cam Hayward, and Simmons. And they were not, you know, in non-factors for the most part. It's wild. You just don't see that. So they're onto something. There's no question. So they'll give you plenty more times for you to fill up space. You're going to have to cut. You might have to relocate here to Cincinnati for too long.
I don't know. The one company in football media worked based out of Cincinnati. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I work for a different one. No, I've been really, it's been fun for me. This is like, it's not just me just kind of regressing to the mean about my Bengals takes. I really just think that they should get a lot of credit for how well they're coaching and Burrow's play. So much hype last year, and don't get me wrong, Burrow was playing excellent last year, but this is just more, this is real. This is like the real growth you want to see from your star quarterback. And it's like, holy crap, this guy can be, this is a really good player on a really good offense.
Yep. Nate, I appreciate it. I look forward to more chats in the future, and you probably have a meal that you need to get to. I assume you've cooked something and it's like wafting, and that's what's caused all this.
I think I have some leftovers or something. I don't know. As soon as we started this call, I had some coffee. I'm like, man, I need to eat. I think that's what it was. The coffee hit my empty belly, and I just felt the acidity just burn a hole. So I was like, oh man,
food. Well, eat your vegetables. Don't go directly for the cookie dough and ice cream in the deep freeze. I recommend eating your vegetables.
Sounds good. Thanks, dude.
Thanks, Nate. Appreciate it, man. All right, let's just take a quick break. All right, much thanks to Nate for catching up
with us. Great talking with him. I'm hungry now. So we have this conversation. I enjoyed the part about how, you know, you eat your vegetables, like Burrow's the eat your vegetables quarterback, you know, and then these other guys, you know, it's the ice cream. I love the ice cream in the deep freeze where the Bengals can go eat the ice cream in the deep freeze when they need it. But what makes Burrow great is that he's just going to hammer those vegetables, man. He's just going to make the right decision every time, eat his greens, doesn't have to go. Last year, it was nothing but ice cream, right? Now, you've got sustainability. This will keep you healthy for a long time. Love that. Love talking to Nate, and I had to go eat as soon as we were done chatting there. I think he did too. A lot of this, how Burrow has been. I wanted to there's a lot of numbers to get to and to talk about. One thing I wanted to talk about as part of this that I didn't get to the other day with the in our Burrow MVP chat, which that story are the MVP vote, three quarters of the year Athletic MVP vote is in, and they have Mahomes number one, Hurts number two, and Burrow coming in at third now. I have sort of the case of Joe Burrow. It's going to be laid out. That will be that way, which I talked about last week. That will be up tomorrow morning, Friday morning, to piggyback on this story. And there's a lot in there, a lot I talked about the other day, a lot that I didn't talk about the other day that's in there. One thing I didn't talk about the other day that I want to get in is just the stat line, because I'm sitting next to the media room when I kind of had actually – I had stumbled upon it before as part of the research, and I just was like, Jay, you have to see this. This is it's unbelievable when you look at it. So I wanted to really separate situationally, you know, quantify clutch, kind of quantify high leverage, because that's such a big part of Burrow. It's not just general overall stats, and you know, it's when, it's the how, it's how he comes through in these big moments all the time. And so what I did was pretty simple, really. I mean, everything is under the since week three, but I went into fourth quarter and overtime of games that are close. That's it. So fourth quarter and overtime of games that were within 10 points either direction, and look up the stats on that. And he is so far above everyone else. Here's his stat line in those situations, plays in those situations. He's 37 of 46, which is an 80% completion. 541 yards, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions. That is 11.8 yards per attempt, Jay.
That's insane.
No, obviously no interceptions, so no turnovers, only 3 sacks, a passer rating of 151.9. Perfect is 158.3. Next closest, let's see, Jalen Hurts has a rating of 136.4. Nobody else is even above 111. I mean, this man has just been so stone cold when it has to happen. That has been, you know, consistent. If the game's close and it's in the big moments, he is just a chainsaw. He's just a chainsaw, just cutting everything in his path. Precise. He 80% completion, 151 passer rating. And it's not at the expense of throwing it downfield. I mean, to have 11.8 yards per these are alien numbers that you wouldn't even think exist. Just crazy stuff. It's a great quantification of Burrow's, you know, rise to the moment, which is something that really separates him from the other guys.
There's nothing surprising about saying Joe Burrow is clutch and he's good when the game matters the most. We've seen it before we even got here. We saw it at LSU, but then you see those numbers and you showed them to me or read them to me, because I can't see that far without my glasses. And
oh man,
it was stunning. It was staggering. And I wonder even that completion percentage, there's got to be a spike or two in there to kill the clock. I mean, that
right.
If you take those, it's even crazier. So it is. It's, and then anytime it's one thing just to look at a guy's numbers and see how good they are, but then when you compare, and like you did, where he ranked with everybody else, and with Hurst being the next closest, and then all the way down to 111 for the third, it's amazing. Even though you see it week in and week out, to actually look at the body of work and what he's done in those high leverage situations. I mean, that's what these games are going to be. that's what these games coming down the stretch and these playoff games, that's when they're going to be determined. And if you've got that guy running the show, I mean, who's betting against another deep run?
I mean, it's kind of the way they've won these games. Mm. You know, it's why they've won so many of them. So, but we shall see. But that was good. So, but fourth quarter, Jay, that's part of one of our stat teases. You have some fourth quarter stats in general, not just necessarily specific to Burrow.
Yeah, it's not just all Burrow, but it's the Bengals have outscored their opponents 83-46 in the fourth quarter. That 37-point differential is fourth best in the league, behind the Jets, Cowboys, and Vikings, all teams that obviously would be in the playoffs right now. Fourth quarter points per drive, 2.37, second best in the league. 13 penalties in the fourth quarter, second fewest. Offensive EPA, they rank third. Their fourth quarter turnover margin is +3. That's fifth in the league. Defensively, yards allowed, eighth fewest. Points per drive allowed, eighth fewest. Opponent passer rating, 11th lowest. They are just, it's not just Joe Burrow. It's the entire team is at its best in the fourth quarter when it matters most.
They've got a knack for finding a way to finish, which is funny because at the early part of the year, they just couldn't quite finish, mm-hmm. right? And they've turned that part around both defensively and offensively to kind of get better at finishing those games, and that's how they're 8-2. I mean, you know, that's... It's as simple as that. So turnovers, also a big part of this, obviously. Jay, you've got turnover stats for us to talk about when you think about how the Bengals have been really on such a nice run in that regard, where you just really that Browns game is the last time we've really kind of relevantly talked about turnovers at all.
Yeah, well, if you remember after week one, after they had the -5 against Pittsburgh, that was our run passer boot, was will they ever get above zero in turnover differential? And they did it pretty quick. I think it was week three or week four, and they were back on top in the plus. They've been turnover free in their last two games, three of the last four, and four of the last six. Even with that five turnover game in the opener, they only have 12 turnovers this year in 12 games. The franchise record for fewest is 17. Now that was in a 16 game season. So that was 1.1 point per game. They're averaging 1.0 per game right now.
With the five spot.
With
in the opener.
Five in week one, which is just crazy. If you take out that week one aberration, they're +7 from week 12 or from week 2 to week 13. You look at everybody, that +7 would be third best in the league behind the Eagles, who are +12, and Cowboys are +9. They also, one of those five turnovers was a fumble in the opener. They've only lost three fumbles since then. That's one shy of the Cowboys' best in the league. Cowboys have lost two. Bengals only lost three from week two on. It's just whether it's running with the ball as running backs, whether it's receivers catching the ball and securing it, Joe Burrow taking care of it, they are just not turning the ball over. And I mean, any game, any matchup you talk about, what's the first thing any coach or player says? Got to win the turnover battle. They are doing that consistently.
Why is that happening? How is that happening? You talked to Brian Callahan a little bit about that yesterday. Let's bring in Bengals offensive coordinator Brian Callahan on the turnover topic.
I know you'd like it to be zero, but ball security has been really good. Yeah. I mean, not just Joe, the entire team since week one. I mean, where do you see that right now? Is that as good as you could
hope for? About as good as you could hope for. Yeah. You know, I commend our guys. Justin Hill does a presentation every week, every Wednesday morning, and it's all about the ball, and usually has some sort of clips from whatever team we're playing on bad ball security. We emphasize it. It's how to carry the ball, how to carry it right. Where do fumbles occur? Why do they occur? And you just hammer that, and we work on it all the time. And so, you know, the old saying is you get what you emphasize, and we've done a really good job of emphasizing the security of the ball, and our guys buy into it, and they do a great job of it, of securing it in traffic and carrying it high and not worrying about not putting it in harm's way, and that's a huge part of being able to take care of it, is knowing how to take care of it. And I think that our guys have done a great job executing the things that, that we ask them to do when it comes to the technique of carrying the ball in traffic as a runner. And then obviously Joe has the ultimate responsibility of, you know, not putting the ball in harm's way. And I think he's probably been as good as anybody I've ever been around without putting the ball in spots other than a handful of tips and some freak picks by TJ Watt. He's done about as good a job as you could ever ask a quarterback to do with, you know, being aggressive without being reckless. And I think that's a, you know, a huge reason why we've been able to win games is we don't give the ball away.
So, you know, one thing that Brian says there, Jay, is he talks about, look, Burrow's just, he's just as good as anybody I've ever seen it doing this right now. I mentioned the other day, 1.4% turnover worthy plays rate since week three. So not only is that the best amongst anyone, that would be the lowest. That number would be the lowest by any quarterback since 2017 and Matt Ryan. No one's been that low when you consider how much he throws it, how much the ball is in his hands, just not hardly have any. What he has been after since getting past those first couple of weeks has been just ruthless as far as absolutely no negatives, you know, just never setting the other team up like Callahan said, making them earn every single one.
It's one thing not to put the ball in danger with a lot of checkdowns and easy throws. That's not what he's doing. I mean, look at 3rd and 11. Look at some of these throws he's making in those situations where he's making really, really difficult throws, and they could very easily be tipped and end up being turnovers. And he is just spot on. The accuracy is almost perfect. I wonder, on those stats you had, those fourth quarter, did you do turnover-worthy plays? Because he's leading the league overall. I imagine he's got an insane lead in those fourth quarter situations. Or I guess that's hard to do because that's a PFF metric that kind of
I'd have to go over and cross check it on PFFs, yeah. which I could do, but I have a separate PFF section as part of it. All of that and more in the MVP story tomorrow. So make sure you check that out. So all of this is to say, they got to avoid it against the Browns because this is what's happened, right? This is why they've lost all these games to the Browns. For some reason, when they play this team, it's different. It's Denzel Ward with a 99-yard pick six interception return, right? Burrow has 5 career red zone interceptions, and 3 of them are against the Browns. You know, it's weird. The Myles Garrett play that you saw, the fumble, I mean, that very uncharacteristic stuff seems to happen against the Browns, which is why uncharacteristic results seem to happen against the Browns consistently. It's a weird thing. It's hard to figure out. So if we're trying to figure it out, we should go to Zach Jackson because Zach can help us figure it out. So Jay, here's Jay's conversation with Zach Jackson this week, talking about all things Cleveland Browns right now.
We just talked to Zach Jackson. Seems like not that long ago. Zach, how's everything in Cleveland today?
It wasn't that long ago. Everything's cheery. You know, the Browns are going to make a rally and win the Super Bowl. So we'll see what happens. This is an interesting – it's been an interesting year. It's been an interesting century, right? But, you know, the Browns are confident they can beat the Bengals. So – and they should be. So I'm really looking forward to this one for many reasons.
I wanted to ask you about that, and I wanted to start with Deshaun Watson, obviously, but since you brought it up, let's just get right to it. I mean, it's crazy. You've covered a Browns team that was owned and dominated by the Steelers. I've covered a Bengals team, same way. That kind of made sense. This one is just weird. 5 in a row, 8 of 9 from your side of covering the Browns. What do you think it is about this rivalry currently where it's just so one-sided?
Well, I think some of it is that when the Browns are locked in, the Bengals have trouble blocking them, right? I think some of it is like last year's game in Cincinnati. The Browns were keyed up for that moment, and it felt like it was going to be a 42-41. Denzel picks off that ball and runs it back. And, you know, then eventually the Browns started throwing the ball down the field, which they hadn't done at that point in over a month, right? So the Browns have good players. You know, the Browns – I think they, you know, they run similar base offensive systems. You know, I think Myles Garrett gets up for the game. I think the Bengals really, you know, didn't manage the last one well and didn't have Ja'Marr Chase. Now, he could have played that game and the Browns were going to win. It was a complete butt kicking, right? But, you know, I think there's something to be said for this being a matchup based league, being a lot of it. And, you know, like I said, if you look at the Browns over the course of their 12 games, they've just played poorly in a couple of them. But other than that, it's been Jay just not connecting the dots at the right time or just picking the wrong time to be bad. And against the Bengals, like going back to that Denzel Ward 99 yarder, they've picked the right time to make the play, and it snowballed positively from them from there.
Yeah, it almost seems like they are so – the Bengals are so set on not letting the Browns run the ball on them that they make themselves vulnerable in the pass game. And it does. This is a team that very rarely gives up big plays, but it seems like the Browns always find a way to hit one or two. And now you've got a quarterback who could – hit some of those that it won't seem as odd as a Jacoby Brissett hitting long balls down the field. Before we get to Sean on the field, I was really found it interesting, the piece that you wrote. And if for people that are watching or listening, want to go check it out on the site, it's great. Zach went to Houston and sat in the stands and did gauge the reaction to Deshaun Watson coming back. And I just wanted, you know, what was your major takeaway from that? What did you expect? Did it live up to what you expected going in? And what was the experience like sitting in the stands for a game as opposed to the press box?
Well, the easy answer is no, because we did it because we expected vitriol, right? We expected this negative reaction and people yelling at him and Browns players engaging back to them. And there was none of that. I mean, the Texans are so bad, Jay. Like an hour and 15 minutes before the game, there just was nobody in the parking lot. The only people, you know, they blew a horn or a buzzer or some sort, like most stadiums do, like, hey, the gates are open, here we go. Well, 15 minutes later, the only people in the building were wearing orange, right? Either yellow security or orange Browns. And Texans fans sold their tickets to Browns fans. You know, I sat in the fourth row, 30, 35 yard line. I was surrounded by people wearing Deshaun Watson's jerseys and Browns players' parents, wives, cousins, things like that, who, you know, usually those tickets cost a premium. In Houston, they didn't really cost that much because Texan fans just didn't want to go. So, you know, the guys in front of me had Deshaun Watson red Texans jerseys on. The guy next to me had a Deshaun Watson Browns jersey on. Like, you just don't see that, right? So it was unique. It was interesting. It was a different view of the game. But, I mean, they booed him, and they booed him loudly. There were some signs, of course. There were people wearing the Predator stuff out in the parking lot. But those were a couple people, not a couple thousand. Like, there were way more people there to cheer for the Browns and for Deshaun Watson specifically than there were to hate on him. And how it came across was, you know, he dapped up people in the crowd in Texans gear, like he knew them. Once the game started, he never looked up once, and I never heard anything even close to an incident or something that got anybody on the Browns sideline attention. It was a game that Deshaun played really poorly and the Texans were worse. And the Browns got away from it, and they expect to be better, and they need to be better because he was awful.
Yeah, one of those signs you mentioned you got a photo of that's in the story. I imagine that was not left up very long before security pulled that one down. But with his performance, what was it? Rust? Did he look uncomfortable? Was it mechanics? I mean, what led to we wrote about it in the whip round last week, and I think we all fully expected some rust, but not that level.
Yeah, so I expected bad. It was way worse. Mm-hmm. And I think you can say rust. I think you can say, you know, without being a quarterback mechanic expert, that, you know, he's speeding up between nerves and rust and everything else. He wasn't getting his eyes and his feet and his arm, you know, on the same wavelength, and that was obvious. But what's concerning to me is, you know, he had been playing, he had been training, right? It's not like he just came out of nowhere after 2 years. And when we saw him miss in the summer, it was a lot of short arm stuff, 7 and 9 yard passes coming up 2 yards short. And that was still those same misses. So can we attribute that to, like I said, he's just not, it's happening too fast and he's too excited? Probably. Can he get that fixed in 1 week? I don't know. I mean, Jay, I don't think that he forgot how to play football or throw a ball. And even back to the spring and summer, you know, we saw shaky play in practice. It's ugly, and we saw great throws. But, you know, someone who's worked in the NFL for a long time texted me last Friday and said, what do you think? What happens if he just can't play anymore? And he wasn't proposing that as a real thing, but he was proposing it as a question that's been asked. So it certainly would be not fair to jump to that conclusion after one game. And it certainly wouldn't be fair after 1 month, right? But when Stefanski says there's a human element here, he means like Deshaun was nervous, Deshaun hasn't played, and we're putting a guy in a huddle who hasn't been in a huddle in a long time or in our huddle for the first 11 games. But you're also saying there's a human element here, and when you haven't played in 2 years, you know, it's going to take a while if you can ever get back to that level.
Yeah, the one that comes to mind with me is always Michael Vick with the prison sentence. And, you know, he did. He came back. He wasn't great right away, but he did eventually get back into form. Assuming whenever it is that Deshaun gets – maybe it's Sunday in Cincinnati. Whenever it is that he gets back to form, and when who benefits most from him coming back on the field?
Well, I mean, the people would get to keep their jobs that work in the front office. So I almost jumped the gun on your question. You know, on the field, everybody, right? Like Nick Chubb has a case as the NFL's best running back. Like he can benefit from that. You know, Watson himself has never played with a run game or an offensive line near this good. You know, Amari Cooper has been really, really solid his whole career, and he's been that this year. Donovan Peoples-Jones has gone from a guy who would occasionally make a play, and you saw the talent, to a guy who's been really consistent this year outside of Watson and should only take off from there. I mean, he is an example of a guy that you just see his confidence growing. And so he's still young. He can get down the field. He's not like a top end burner, but he's a guy that you would think you make a lot more 15 and 25 yard receptions in the future than the 8 and 9 yarders he's been putting his body on the line to make. So, you know, ideally everyone would benefit, but Jay, I mean, I'm not afraid to say this. You know, the Browns, of course, talked about Deshaun Watson and, of course, knew they needed to move on from Baker Mayfield, and they were right about all that. Ultimately, Deshaun told them no, and they came back with money. That's ownership driven. But what, to me, took this idea from the idea stage and maybe the second or third year into overdrive was the Bengals having Joe Burrow and making the Super Bowl last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Browns looked and said, we have Baker Mayfield, and he's not a franchise quarterback. We look around and see what's in our division, and that happened there. And Joe's so young and so everything, right? That was a big thing. So, you know, maybe we won't see it on full display this week. And chances are that this game doesn't mean a lot because the Browns, even if they were to make a run here, would still need a miracle, right? But this should be setting up for these games that are going to be big time standings wise, big time primetime TV. And you know, we think the Bengals are going to be good for a long time. And the Browns wouldn't have made this move if they don't think they're going to be too.
Yeah, I fully expect to see the Battle of Ohio in primetime again next year and maybe every year for the foreseeable future. It'll depend on what the reaction is, you know, league-wide, country-wide with Deshaun Watson, but those games are going to be fascinating. The last Bengals game, Bengals-Browns game, was in primetime. It was, what, the night before the trade deadline? And there was a lot of talk about
– right.
Yeah, a lot of talk about Kareem Hunt wanting to be traded. That didn't happen. What's that been like since? Is it kumbaya? Have they found more of a role for him alongside Nick Chubb, or how has that running game looked differently since the trade deadline to now?
Yeah, it hasn't been kumbaya, and Kareem hasn't been as much of a factor as he was early in the year, but last week he got involved. I always thought his skill set matched a more open offense. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just been circumstantial. Like I said, the case of the season. I think a lot of times he was open and Jacoby Brissett just didn't see him or didn't get it to him, but he's still a good player. You know, is he a top 15 back in this league? Probably not anymore, but he is a great finisher of runs. He's an exceptional pass catcher out of the backfield. What the Bengals are seeing with P. Ryan right now is what Kareem Hunt can be, you know, the bigger guy who can get tough yards, but also can do things on the perimeter that a lot of smaller guys can't. So, they're going to need the run game. Look, the Browns want to do this RPO stuff and this read option stuff with Deshaun, but if they can't trust him to throw it or make the right read, it's going to be run. So I think you're going to see three running backs for the Browns in this game: Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, and Deshaun Watson.
The other side of the ball, and there is another side of the ball when you're talking about the Browns. 2 weeks ago, you wrote about this, how they had these issues on defense and special teams that they needed to fix, and then boom, they go to Houston. It seems like it's all fixed. You know, was that a product of playing a bad Texans team, or has this team gotten better defensively and on special teams?
Yeah. So what made the crash after the bye week so disappointing is the defense had really played well. played well enough to win in Baltimore and didn't, and then dominated the Bengals, right, in that game, and came out and laid a couple of eggs. So now they've bounced back with two straight really good performances, and we know Tampa is really reeling and kind of gave the game away with some management things. We know the Texans are completely helpless. I mean, they're as bad as the 17 Browns. There's no doubt. I've seen them both up close, right? But, yeah, you know, you force turnovers in this league, and everything gets a little more rosy. And the Browns really built their defense on speed and turnovers. Now, some of that is they've paid the price with getting gashed in the run game. They've had to change some guys out, and they just lost their starting middle linebacker to a torn ACL in the last game. But their whole vision is to be good in the secondary, and they are good. They're capable of being great. And for Myles Garrett and Clowney to make those plays that change games. And I think the last couple of weeks we've seen that. Clowney was non-existent the first half of the year. Clowney's been a factor. And Myles, you know, Myles is so talented, Jay, that people expect him to do it all the time. And frankly, I do too sometimes, right? So this is a top five talent, and he's had some big statistical games. I think in the Tampa game, his impact was more than the statistics showed. But I mean, even if it's just one sack a game, and another time he gets back there and forces an errant throw or deflects a ball, like, he really changes offensive game plans. You don't have to be a film guru to look down there and say, I'm going to watch 95 this play, and the other team is using a tight end, using a running back to block him before they get into anything else. And that affects the timing of everything.
And he has done it all. Every time he plays the Bengals, that's been the case. And that Bengals O-line has improved quite a bit from not just the beginning of the year, but since that Monday night game. So that's going to be a really interesting matchup to watch and see if they can finally figure out a way to slow down Myles Garrett. Something you alluded to when we first hopped on is how the Browns are hot now and they're going to the Super Bowl. And I know you were joking, but it is two in a row. It's three out of five. We know what this roster is. It's a quality roster. Now you got the quarterback if he shakes off the rust and can get it going. I mean, have you seen enough to believe that they can be a factor in December in the first couple weeks of January?
Yes, because in the here and now, I can believe it because I know they can beat the Bengals, right? Yeah. And because if this defense is not just blowing elementary coverages and is forcing even one turnover, they're giving themselves a chance. So they will carry a certain level of confidence into this game on both sides. You know, they will have a plan, I think, that allows them to work around Deshaun not having his A game or anything close. And we know how this goes. So it's a fascinating thing. Like, I wasn't really I was writing, obviously, Jay. I wasn't watching Bengals Chiefs closely, but I was chuckling when I did get to watch the last couple of minutes. And I thought, look at the Bengals with all this poise and all this firepower putting away this team. And they play the Browns, and they can't do that. And obviously, they played the JVs in Week 18 last year. That's not what we're counting. Yeah. But last year's game in Cincinnati, I mean, when we left that game and I said, one of these teams is going to the Super Bowl, would there have been 1% of you that said it was going to be the Bengals? Right? So they can be hard to block, right? They can be hard to tackle. Did we, me, some others, overrate some of the talent? I think top to bottom, yes. I think they had some bad moments and gave away a game or two, and those could come back to haunt them. So I don't think the Browns are going to make the playoffs, and I don't think they're going to win out. But I won't be surprised if you see a quality performance Sunday that at very least has this game going to the last 5 minutes.
Well, let's put it on record then. We'll end it here with what is your prediction and score for Sunday?
I'm having a rough year in the prediction business, Jay.
We all are.
Well, in the last battle of Ohio, before betting is legal in Ohio, I would tend to lay the 6 on the Bengals because I just think the Browns offense was that bad. And I think if the Bengals get the lead, and I think the Bengals should be all sorts of inspired and pissed off by the last couple of events and Joe hearing that he can't beat the Browns and all of that. Right. So I would expect a competitive game, but I would end up picking something like 27-19 Bengals.
Okay. We shall see. I'm picking a good time in the press box talking to you before kickoff, looking to get some more stories from you from Houston. I thought that was a really great idea. And again, anybody that's listening to this, go check out Zach's story. It's really well done. Zach, thank you for jumping on as always. And we do look forward to seeing you on Sunday.
I thought the story was a lot like the Browns trade for Deshaun Watson. A really good idea, and it turned out just to be okay.
All right. Always great to catch up with Zach Jackson and everything that's happening in Cleveland. Jay, takeaway?
Yeah, it's more the what he did. It's more in the stands than on the field. I'm really interested to see because, as you guys heard, he went to Houston. He sat in the stands to see what the reaction to Deshaun Watson was, and there was far less vitriol than he expected. I don't think that's going to be the case Sunday at Paycor. This being the rivalry it is, I think fans are going to let Deshaun hear it right and left. I don't know how many banners or signs are going to be confiscated, but I thought it was a great idea of Zach to do that, a great story idea. And it surprised me that it wasn't as fierce of a reaction. But again, I don't think that's going to be the case Sunday at Paycor.
No. All right, let's get into it a little bit. Jay, Arby's time. any related Bengals insight, extras and stories. I think I forgot the I last week. It's been a long everything. What do you got?
So you were in talking to Joe Burrow as well as the rest of the media, and Richard Skinner and I went over to talk to Samaje Perine. It was just the two of us. And the first question Skinny asked, Perine says, "It's been fun." And that's his answer about taking it. And it's like, oh, this is how this is going to go. Well, it didn't. He really, really, we kept asking questions. We got on some different topics that really interested him. And he ended up talking I had him for 13 minutes on my recorder. And one of the more interesting, I was talking to him. I just asked him his philosophy on the stiff arm and hand placement. I was just trying to get some technicalities on that. And he said that he can't do the Derrick Henry shoulder pad stiff arm because his arms aren't long enough. And when that one that you saw him mush Justin Reed in the face, he said, that's what he has to do. His arms are shorter. He's got to hit the guy in the face. Got to make sure he doesn't get the face mask. I thought it was, that was interesting. Him breaking that down. And then obviously I think maybe 4 or 5 minutes that Skinny and I were talking to him by ourselves. Then Joe Burrow's news conference ended. And then while Samaje was talking to us, his back was almost completely turned to us. He's kind of like talking into his locker instead of talking to us. And as more and more people came, he realized, okay, I got to turn around. There's cameras there. And when it was all over, Skinny went back up to him. He apologized to him. He's like, I thought it was just going to be the two of us. He's like, I'm sorry that went that long. I didn't expect that. And Smaj is just like, yeah, part of the job.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was part of what he talked about too, is how he and Joe are such a great fit, where Joe is outgoing and loves to talk. And Samaj likes to sit back and just listen and let Joe have all the attention. And it's the play on the field kind of mirrors their personalities as people.
Yeah. One thing I've found, there's always, different personality types. You never know as far as how to talk to them, how these conversations typically work, get the best stuff, whatever. Samaje is the ultimate. He just needs to get his stretch in, like his interview stretch. Like he needs, you give 2 minutes of him kind of warming up to the concept of actually having a talk. And then once he's kind of stretched out, he goes, and and he's great. And then a lot of us that way, I'm like that. Like sometimes I'm just like, yeah, I don't know if I really would. All right, if you want to talk, I got a story, right? Like it's just, sometimes it just takes you a little while to get in the groove. He's kind of like that. And I always feel like every single time I'd ever talk to him, he would always be like, why do you want to talk to me? Like, why? I don't want to. And be like, look, you are relevant, and I really enjoy talking to you once we get past the first 2 minutes and we warm it up. It's great. And so Samaje is kind of that way. I enjoy that. Standing back, it was kind of funny yesterday because you look back and you're like, okay, everyone is around Samaje Perine, Mitch Wilcox, and Trenton Irwin has a couple of people. We've reached that point of the program where these are the stories. These are the evolving stories. And that says something about the job
that the Bengals personnel have done in keeping these guys around and pinpointing who the role players who could bubble up could be, the coaches, the position coaches in those rooms for keeping those guys involved and them becoming a storyline. And Mitch Wilcox, you know, is the latest. He'll be, you know, everybody had very great things to say about Mitch Wilcox and who he's been and what he's going to be because they need him now. So a lot going on there. All right, let's get into a Bengals growler bet. We had no winner last week. We're going to kind of stick around in the mix and Pirine conversation, Jay. What Bengals growler bet, obviously send your answers to me, pdaner@theathletic.com or to us on Twitter, hashtag Bengals growler bet. Just know if you email me, I need the word growler in the subject header somewhere. If you use something clever and fun, I will really enjoy it. It will make me happy. And maybe I'll give you the Ray White treatment and read your subject header on air if it makes me laugh.
So we're going to do a two-prong one this week.
Yeah.
And it's differential in touches between Pirine and Mixon. So if you think it's going to be Mixon 18 and Pirine 12, then your guess there is Mixon by 6. And then it's also differential in yards. So you have to pick which player is going to have more touches and what that number is, or what the differential is, and which player is going to have more yards and what the differential is there. And it's scrimmage yards. It's not just rushing yards.
So touch differential, scrimmage yards differential for Joe Mixon, Samaje Perine on Sunday against the Browns is this week's Bengals growler bet. All right, Jay, what do you got?
I'm going to go Mixon by 8 touches and Mixon by 28 yards.
Okay. I'm going to say Mixon plus 12, and I'm going to say Mixon by 54.
Woo. Big game for Joe or
yeah.
Nothing for Pirine? Okay.
No, I think big game for Joe. I think big game for Joe Mixon. This is what happens, right? You remember it was the last time he played a full game. Everyone was crushing him during the week, right?
Yeah.
And he went out and went bananas. Okay. So now another couple of weeks of people taking shots and talking about Samaje Perine, even though the last game he played, he had 200 plus scrimmage yards and 5 touchdowns. The Browns have certainly had many long stretches of not being the greatest rush defense this year. The way the Bengals offense is going, Jamar's back. Feels like a good day for Joe Mix. That's just my personal opinion, and I'm entitled to it.
Both Joe Mixon and Samaje Perine with their career high in scrimmage yards in their last full games.
Yes.
Mixon's 211 against Atlanta was his high, and Samaje's 155 last week was his high.
It's like you're trying to tell me who's back there doesn't really matter that much, Jay.
Kind of does sound that way.
Is that something that's been, you know, said by a lot of people for a very long time about the running back position?
Yeah. Okay. Don't pay them.
Just checking. All right. Well, they probably won't. So anyway, let's go. I've got stats, Jay.
Oh, yes.
I've got win streak stats. Trivia for you and okay. to our listeners out here. See how you do.
I have losing streak trivia for you. So we'll do this. We'll bookend this.
Look at us go. Okay. I've got to find it here. So the Bengals are on a 4-game win streak right now. In-game win streaks. First of all, do you know what is the longest in-season win streak? Do you know what is the longest in-season win streak in Bengals franchise history?
I mean, I would guess the 8 to start the 15 season.
Correct.
Okay.
Very well done. How many in-season win streaks longer than 4, 5 or more? How many in-season win streaks of 5 or more have there been in Bengals franchise history?
Well, I know they started 6-0 in 88. Maybe one other one, maybe 3 total.
8.
Wow.
There's actually been 8.
That's correct. Now, some we're going back. The 70s. People forget how strong the Bengals were in the 70s. A seven-game win streak in 1970.
Oh, that's right.
The first six to start 88, as you mentioned. A six-game win streak in 75. Kenny and Isaac Curtis had it cooking at that point. 73, they had six in a row as well. 2011, the Bengals won five in a row. People might forget that as the defense was playing very well in their kind of Andy Dalton rookie year breakout season. 1981, of course, five in a row in the Super Bowl season. 1976, five in a row. But so there you go. Since 2000, this would only be, well, really before that night. You can always go back all the way to 1990, of course. It would be only the third time if they can make it happen here on Sunday that they have won five in a row.
So we know they've lost five in a row to the Browns. I was curious where that ranks in their longest losing streaks against a single opponent. And it's they actually have two current five-game losing streaks against an opponent. They've lost five in a row to the Cowboys, which is an active streak. But what do you think the longest losing streak is against a single opponent?
A single opponent?
Yes.
The Steelers, probably, yeah. Right? Eight.
It was 11.
11?
From 2015 to 2020.
Yeah.
Till Ryan Finley rescued them from that hell.
Was it 11 in a row? Yeah, I should have known that. I've documented that many times. It ended at 11. You're right. I blew that. I should have known that.
They also had a 10-game streak against the Bills. This isn't even the longest losing streak they've had against the Browns. They had a 7-game losing streak against the Browns in that dark decade of the 90s from 92 to 95. So no one wants to see this losing streak continue, but if it does, it's got a ways to go to reach historic proportions.
Okay, run, pass, or boot for Sunday if you want to, come up with some good game conversation with your buddies while you're hanging out at the tailgate, or you want to play some sort of fictional or real wager on something like this. We got one for you. Okay.
Yeah.
Run, pass, or boot. What will be higher? Deshaun Watson passer rating, Joe Burrow completion percentage, Bengals penalty yards. Okay, Jay, you've got some background on all those stats.
Yeah, so Watson had a 53.4 last week in his return from the suspension. That was his career low. The Bengals were one of the fewest penalized teams in the league last year and again this year until recently, but they've been on a bender of late. 80 penalty yards against the Titans was their season high. 65 last week against the Chiefs was their third highest. So they've that's something they need to cut down. The Burrow completion percentage, you kind of know where that's going to be. So this is all about those other two. I'm going to run with Watson passer rating. I don't think he's going to be great, but I think he can at least be in the 80s, and it's going to be really hard for Burrow to be in the 80s. So I'll run with Watson. I'll pass on Burrow, and I'll boot the penalty yards. I think they'll get back to a little more disciplined team. I mean, the taunting penalty by Jamar Chase, the DJ Reader headbutt for the unnecessary roughness, those are things that are pretty easy to clean up.
Yeah, the big you just don't. They could get hit with some sort of long PI, but yeah. You know, as little as Watson actually threw the ball down the field last game, you know, you feel like not a good chance. You know, maybe there's not even a chance that happens. So I'm with you. I'm going to boot the penalty yards. However, I'm going to run with Burrow completion percentage and pass on Watson's pass rating because look, I listened to Zach Jackson, okay, and we just heard Zach talk about. He was bad. He was really bad. The concept that he is going to suddenly take some massive jump and not look still pretty bad again this week, if that's how he looked against the friggin' Texans, I don't think Watson's going to play well at all in this game. I think maybe eventually he gets it back to a level before this season ends that gets them feeling better about where what they have done to themselves morally and financially with this deal. But I don't think it's going to be this week. That's why I'm going to pass on the Watson pass rating. I think it'll be a rough day for him. Okay. Predictions time. Did I skip over something? I don't want to leave anything out this time, Jay. Did I skip over anything?
No, I think we've got the Browns have a lot of long passes against the Bengals. And you're right. Watson's longest pass last week was 17 yards. They just did not go down the field at all.
Air yards, like attempt, right? Yeah, he didn't even attempt to throw down the field. Yeah,
those were his. That's where the passes were targeted. So, but the Browns have hit the Bengals with a lot of long passing yards during this 8 of 9 losing streak against them. So it's one of those things is going to end. And I'm with you. I don't know that Watson's going to be able to torch them down the field. It's going to be what we always think it is in these games, and that's stopping the run. DJ Reader's back. That's the big difference from that first game. Yes, Ja'Marr Chase is back as well. But I think Reader's presence is really going to lift this defense. If you know you don't have to worry about the deep shots that have burned them in the past, and I think that's a reason they have burned them in the past, is they've sold out so much to stop the run. They can feel more comfortable doing that. I think it's going to be a low scoring game. I think we're going to see quite a few field goals. I'm going Bengals 23, Browns 13.
Okay. Well, because we have to pick together, Jay, I also have the Bengals winning. Yes. I won't spoil that, but I think they score a little bit more. I think you're right. They think they treat this a little bit like the Titans game. Stop the run. Force Watson to prove that he can figure things out in his second game in a couple of years, and hope that you can get some turnovers off of that and get play from ahead, not have it where you just constantly found yourself against the Browns having to stop Nick Chubb and let Myles Garrett tee off. It's just the worst thing you can do, that as much as against any team. Got to get ahead. We say that a lot. We've said that a lot about this team, but it has proven correct, and specifically correct this week to avoid it looking like it did on the Nightmare on Halloween. So I think they do. I think you mentioned Reader. I think that they will be good enough against Chubb, who they really were pretty good against last time for the most part. Contained him about as much as you could hope to. Certainly good enough to win in that regard. The rest of it just wasn't so good. So I've got Bengals 28, Browns 17, and you know, a interception or two from Watson kind of ended up being the difference in this one. All right, that will wrap us up. You will next hear from us on Sunday night. And you know what it is on Sunday, Jay? Sunday at 1.
Yes.
Oh, Sunday thank goodness. At 1, how much I love you.
And at home.
Yes, home Sunday at 1, just as good as it gets. So we'll have the walkout to you well before you decide to pass out while trying to stay up for the Sunday night game. And to keep an eye out for that. We look forward to it. Hope everyone enjoys this weekend in Cincinnati and that the boo is everything you hope it will be. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We will talk to you on Sunday night. Have a good one, everybody.